Good morning, and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book Study. My name is Mo H., and I'm a recovered compulsive overeater from Walnut Creek, California. Today is Friday, August the 18th, and this is the 10 a.m. Eastern Time meeting. And today we are reading from the Big Book, and we are on page 101, the first paragraph. We meet these conditions every day. And we're reading through that one paragraph only, ending with, on the theory, he would escape the alcohol problem. Today's reads are Lois P. for the 12 steps, Rhonda H. for the 12 traditions, and I have my readers are Chanel T. and Lorraine N. The share ID for Thursday, August 17th, the 10 a.m. meeting, is 20,541. And for this morning's meeting, Friday, August the 18th, the 7 a.m. meeting, it's 20,551. Our newcomer greeter is Carla C., and the announcements person is Shelley E. Thank you all for your service. The OA preamble, Overeaters Anonymous, is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose. OA's fifth tradition states, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. Add a vision for you. Big Book Study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. And here are the steps we took, which are suggested as a program of recovery. And I will now ask Lois P. to read the 12 steps. Good morning, Lois.
Good morning, Mo. Good morning, everyone. This is Lois P., gratefully recovered in New York. Step one, we admitted we were powerless over food and that our lives had become unmanageable. Step two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Step three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. Step four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Step five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Step six, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Step seven, humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. Step eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Step nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. Step 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. Step 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. Step 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs.
Thank you, Lois, very much. And now I will ask Rhonda R. to read our 12 traditions. Good morning, Rhonda.
Good morning, Mo. Thank you for your service. Hello, everyone. Rhonda R., very grateful in Georgia. The 12 traditions. One, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. Two, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. Three, the only requirement for OA membership is the desire to stop eating compulsively. Four, Each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. 5, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. 6, an OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7, every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8, Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9, OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10, Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, film, television, and other public media of communication. 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Thank you for the opportunity to do service today. With that, I'll pass.
Thank you very much, Rhonda H. I'm Rhonda R. Sorry about that. How our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature, then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we are discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year, and for readers is 6 months. There is no abstinence requirement for sharing on the topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute your phone. Once you are done sharing, let us know by saying pass, and then press star 1 to remute your phone again. To have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speakers should be muted. And today we resume our study of the Big Book, and we are on page 101, the first paragraph. We meet these conditions every day through, it ends with, on the theory he would escape the alcohol problem. Studying that one paragraph only. And I will now ask Chanel T. to get us started. Good morning, Chanel.
Good morning, Mo. This is Chanel T. Good morning, everyone. Chanel T., and I am a grateful compulsive eater living in recovery by the grace of God today. We meet these conditions every day. An alcoholic who cannot meet them still has an alcoholic mind. There is something the matter with his spiritual status. His only chance for sobriety would be someplace Greenland ice cap. And even there, turn up with a bottle of scotch and ruin everything. Ask any woman who has sent her husband to distant places on the theory he would escape the alcohol problem. Well, I'm not going to lie. When I was first abstinent, I had been told by my sponsor that I could think of that as a hospitalization period. And so I did not go to some of these places, these restaurants for me, that would be temptation for me. I didn't have this experience where immediately the obsession was lifted. I was white knuckling it while I was getting through the first several steps. That's my journey, and sticking to it. And what's beautiful is that where it says, an alcoholic who cannot meet them still has an alcoholic mind. There's something matter with his spiritual status. So for me, being in recovery means that I can go anywhere. I can be around anyone. And I'll tell you a story of when I noticed this. About a little less than a month in, I had gone through the steps, was beginning to sponsor. And I didn't really notice something different. I didn't something was different. I didn't feel something was different in my spiritual status until a neighbor passed away unexpectedly. And I liked her very much. And I didn't know her the way a lot of other people knew her. She was a neighbor. So I offered to help the family, and they asked if I could help at her wake. Well, guess what my job was at the wake, which I found out when I got there. It was to serve every single alcoholic food I've ever had in my life. And we're talking gourmet chef type, catered, amazing food. And at no point during that wake, and realizing I was not overcome by grief, I knew her, I cared about her, but it wasn't an overcome by grief situation. At no point during that wake did any of that food call to me for the first time in my entire life that that ever happened. And I realized it doesn't matter where I am, what foods are around me, God has me in a place of neutrality as long as I am in fit spiritual condition. And with that, I will pass. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Chanel, for getting us started. Chanel T. I'll remind everybody where we're at. We're on page 101. First paragraph, we meet these conditions every day. And it ends with, on the theory he would escape the alcohol problem. We had a great opening there. And although we value your experience, we ask that you limit your sharing to every third day in order that others might share their experience too. So who would like to share on this topic?
Barbara E.
Barbara W.
Barbara E. Who was after Barbara E.?
Laura W. from New Jersey.
Laura W.
Christy M.
Christy M.
Roz G.
Roz G. Anyone else? I have Barbara E., Laura W., Christy M., and Roz G. We'll go with that group in a wait time. Okay, Barbara E., you're on.
Good morning.
Good morning, Barbara.
Good morning. Can you hear me?
Very well. Yeah.
Oh, good. Thank you so much for taking this meeting and doing this service, and everyone on the meeting on this somewhat dreary Friday in New Jersey. I am a volume compulsive overeater, a compulsive person, and a much regretting retiring higher power because I can't control anything. And abstaining, I have to be honest, is not easy, but it is much easier than overeating for me. The reason that I think it is easy to overeat is because overeating was a habit. I've done it for so many decades. Actually, processing the extra food was hard on me physically, emotionally, and spiritually. So today, in 2023, when I abstain, I've broken that old habit and lean on a new one. And the transition requires concentration and dedication on my part. I abstain every minute of the day and night if I can, and I'm not perfect. And even when I'm eating, I'm abstaining because I'm eating only planned, moderate meals. I weigh the food on the scale. That's just what I do. And I try not to weigh my success by the scale in the bathroom. When I'm not overeating compulsively according to whim, I feel that ease and comfort. And I have this disease, and I looked up the prefix disease a long time ago. Dishonest, discontent, all of those things I don't want to be, and ease is feeling good in my skin today. So some of us eat apparently and have to go through a certain amount of white-knuckled abstinence before we arrive at the point where abstinence is easier than not abstaining. Others of us are able from the beginning to relax and abstain. Everyone takes a different journey, but we're all on it together. Whether I do it 1 minute at a time one meal at a time. I know that I have this higher power that I don't understand and I don't need to, that's reminding me, Barbara, don't go back for a second portion. Stay upstairs at night. So I have to do whatever I can to stay abstinent, because you know that thing about putting a bullet in a gun and shooting it. One time I might shoot it and there may be no bullet in that gun, that Russian roulette. But the next time it might shoot me dead. And I know I have this disease. It'll never go away. Thank you, my dear. But I have a proven program, and I'm going to stick to it the best I can, imperfectly perfect, one day at a time. And that's all I wish for you, perfection and acceptance, awareness, acceptance, and action. Thank you, everyone. Have a beautiful Friday. I pass.
Thank you, Barbara E. Up next is Laura W., followed by Christy M. Good morning, Laura.
Thanks, Mo. Can I be heard?
Yes, very well.
Thanks. Perfect. This is Laura W. Good morning, everyone. I'm a recovered compulsive eater, anorexic, and exercise bulimic in South Jersey. I love the last two paragraphs. You know, like, we meet these conditions every day. Yeah. I mean, even, you know, there is no geographic cure. So even the Greenland ice cap will, you know, come up with something that's going to tempt us. However, I've been told over and over, and this is my experience only, if I need to avoid temptation, or if I'm trying to avoid temptation, I'm not recovered. And that's just me. I'm not, if I can't be around sugar, alcohol, food without panicking or being uncomfortable, and then I'm still in the disease. Because yes, of course, in the beginning, I was white knuckling it. Why? Because I'm not recovered. I'm not recovered until I work these steps. I could not even go to my best friend's wedding because I was leaving the treatment center on a Sunday and he was getting married the following weekend, and I was only going to be home like a week, and I hadn't been around all that stuff. And I had to make amends to him later on down the road for not being able to attend his wedding. But I was not spiritually fit. I was abstinent, but I was white knuckling it until I got through these steps. And, you know, we meet these conditions every day. I have food in my house that is poison to me. You know, I have two kids. I have a husband. I have, you know, and in the beginning, when I first got abstinent, I didn't have kids. I didn't, you know, so it was much easier just not to bring it in the house. But now the reality is, and the truth is, that life, you know, it's life. If I need to, you know, tell people I can't come to your wedding, or I can't go to that party, or I can't, I have to plan, of course. I have to have my abstinent food either with me or eat it before I go, or eat it when I get home. But, you know, to go there for the people and not for the food is a new experience. And that's something that the 12 steps give me. It tells us in the big book, we will be amazed before we are halfway through. That's not halfway through with the steps. It's halfway through with step 9, with our amends process. So I think that, you know, we need to be patient with ourselves when we're going through these steps, and don't expect, you know, I can't expect when I first got abstinent to be like, okay, I'm great. I can go into any place now. No, because it was uncomfortable and I wasn't spiritually centered. I wasn't connected. I didn't learn how to connect to God, to my higher power, until I got through these steps. So it's a one day at a time process. There's days where I'm not feeling spiritually centered. So am I going to put myself in a position where, you know, I might feel uncomfortable? Well, no, I connect with God. I get on my knees. I ask God to come with me into every situation, and he does. So I'm grateful, you know, for this reminder that I'm never cured, but boy, we can have neutrality around food if we work these steps. Thanks for letting me share. I pass.
Thank you, Laura W. from New Jersey. Up next is Christy M., followed by Roz G., and then I'll take another lineup of people. Good morning, Christy.
Good morning. This is Christy M., grateful, recovering bulimic and anorexic from Portland, Oregon. And this is just a good reminder to me, you know, that the solution for this disease is not in me. And, you know, I really appreciate that this is a journey that is individual to us, just like a relationship. Our relationship with our higher power and our journey to abstinence looks different. And, you know, when I first came into these rooms, I had a tendency to want to compare. And my journey to abstinence was like a complete dogfight with my higher power. I'm a pretty stubborn and strong-willed person, and I did this kind of dance with my higher power for the first 2 years. Is like, I heard about this like tug of war. Like when you play tug of war, it just takes one person to drop the rope, right? To not be in that struggle. And it's like, I would be trying to take my will back from my higher power and then be like, oh, I would drop it. I'd give it back. And then, you know, before I know it, I'd pick it up again. And I didn't even know it. So I would do this dance of, okay, 2 or 3 weeks of abstinence and then a slip or a relapse. And I would just do this cycle. I would do the things that would get me healthy. And then I would think I had it and I'd pick my will back up and I would take back over. And then I would fall again. And, you know, the big book tells us we have a 24-hour reprieve. It's not a 48-hour reprieve. It's not a week-long reprieve. You know, and that's a good reminder that we can't rest on our laurels. I can't do this meeting today and expect to bank that through the weekend. And life is busy. I just went through a move, a job change. I have a lot going on in life. And it's easy to let those little things like working on your food plan or doing a meeting or doing your step work or doing your inventory at night when you're tired because you've been moving all day. It was easy to justify letting those things go. But, you know, really quickly, you can see how quickly the food neutrality would slip. So it's a good reminder, no matter how many years I've been abstinent, no matter how many years I've been in the program, it's still a 24-hour reprieve. And it's based on my spiritual condition. And I know the things that keep me, you know, in the presence of my higher power. And those are things I have to do every day. And if I could have 20 years of abstinence and I stopped doing those for a day, you know, I'll start to lose that neutrality. So this is just a good reminder to me that my program and my recovery has to come first, no matter what's going on in my life. It's a 24-hour reprieve, and I need to continue to just put my higher power, you know, and my relationship with my higher power and my recovery work at the top of my priority list. So with that, I'll pass. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Christy M. from Oregon. Before I take Ross G., let me remind you where we're at. We're on page 101, the first paragraph on that page. We meet these conditions every day, and it ends with, on the theory he would escape alcohol, the alcohol problem. After Ross, I will take another lineup of names. Good morning, Ross.
Good morning, Mo. My name is Ross. I have a bit of a throat infection, so I may sound a little off today, but I'm a recovered compulsive overeater in Palmdale, California, in Los Angeles County. And wherever I go, I take me. And I love to travel. I love to travel. And wherever I go, there's always an opportunity for me to face alcoholic foods everywhere I go. And no matter where I go, I'm a compulsive overeater. I need to remember that. So when I travel, I take the program with me. We live in an age of electronic meetings, and Wi-Fi works pretty much all over the world. So I can attend a phone meeting or a Zoom meeting wherever I go. But beyond that, it's my relationship with God. So I take a mini big book with me. I have several programs on my phone. And just because I'm traveling doesn't mean I don't call or contact my sponsor, or my sponsees don't contact me. It's just an everyday habit. And my prayer and meditation time is like more important as brushing my teeth and taking a shower every day. So when I get up in the morning, I listen to this, you know, the early meeting. I sit in a quiet room with God, with my big book, with my Bible. And I have sponsees that I speak with at a certain time. And I write, I journal, I do my food plan. This is a daily practice. And I do it when I'm on vacation too. And because, like it says, if I'm cut off from the sunlight of the spirit, I'm going to go back into the disease. The disease is waiting for me. I don't blame me. I blame the disease. It's waiting for me because it wants to be fed. It wants to be cradled and rocked. And it's uncomfortable when I'm putting the garlic up to vampire, you know? So I'm so grateful that I have this daily reprieve, that I know what I am, that I love myself no matter what I am, that God is close with me. He's my best friend, and he loves me, and he has a great sense of humor, and I'm cool. I'm good. So thank you very much. I'm going to pass.
Thank you very much, Roz G. And although we value your experience, we ask that you limit your share to your sharing to every third day in order that others might share their experience too. So who would like to share on this paragraph?
Diane N.
Liz A.
Rachel R.
All right, so I got Diane N. and I got Liz A. Who else?
Babylonia. Rachel R.
Babylonia. Rachel, was that a Rachel?
Yeah, Rachel R. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Cheryl S.
Rachel R, Cheryl S. Okay, I have Diane N, I have Liz A, I have Babylonia, I have Rachel R, and I have Cheryl S. I think we'll stop there, and everyone please mute your line except Diane N. Good morning, Diane.
Good morning. I'm Diane. I'm a recovered, not cured, compulsive overeater. And thank you guys for your wonderful service today. When I was reading this, for real, it just reminds, it's as if I have never seen this before. And I've got it highlighted, but it's as if I didn't see it. But today, as I was reading it and listening, I mean, it's just such an awesome read. An awesome thing to be reminded of. It reminds me of why for so many years I couldn't get this recovery. I had short periods of abstinence, but no recovery. And actually, I didn't even realize recovery was possible the way it is today. But I came in the rooms in 1980, and the night I came in, and the lady told me that we couldn't have sugar, white flour from that day until this one, I have received that wonderful gift from my higher power, not having to go back to eat sugar and white flour, refined sugar. But anyway, today, over the years, I've only been in recovery for 4 years. During the pandemic, I received the gift of recovery. But it's because I'm an addict. I mean, I didn't eat the sugar, but I found plenty of other things. I just didn't understand it. I'm like, why am I having problems? I'm not eating sugar. I'm not eating all these other things, but I'm an addict, so I found things to replace it. And this reading reminds me that there's a fellow that says steps 2 and 10 are the most misunderstood steps, and now I understand. I didn't understand because before I was focusing on controlling. I was focusing so hard on trying to control the food, not only the food, but people. And I used to pray that my husband would just lock me up in my room. But Lord knows if he had tried locking so that I wouldn't eat, I felt like if I could just be locked away somewhere, things would be fine. I wouldn't have to eat compulsively. And I know in my heart that if he had tried to lock me up, I would have found a way to get out and get to the food. Because of this strange mental twist in my brain, I had, I'd just be obsessed with food. So today, I am so grateful to be in recovery. And this just plainly tells me why, we have to work step 2 because of this spiritual status. I couldn't stay abstinent because, like I said, I wanted to do things on my own, my way. I wanted to rest on my laurels. I wanted all the things that the people in recovery had. I wanted to be able to eat like Diane wanted to eat. I wanted people to do what I wanted them to do things my way, to follow my script. And it's just not like that. So when those human emotions would pop up, the only thing I knew to do was to eat, to try to suppress them with food. But they kept popping up. I kept finding more things to eat. Even if I gave this one up today, tomorrow I'm eating something else obsessively. So anyway, I'm just thankful for this reading. I just didn't even realize what this is saying until now, our spiritual status, right. The spiritual program. Thank you guys for letting me share. I pass.
Thank you very much, Diane N. Up next is Liz A., followed by Babylonia A. Good morning, Liz.
Good morning, Mo. Thank you for your service and everyone on the line for these great shares. You know, where it says here, an alcoholic who cannot meet them still has an alcoholic mind. And, you know, my experience is as soon as I stopped eating my alcoholic foods, okay, the craving went away. But the big book tells me that the disease is mostly in my mind, okay? We cannot stay stopped. So I had to work the steps in order to get recovered. And the 10th step promises says we have ceased fighting anything or anyone, even alcohol, for by this time sanity will have returned. But then it says we will seldom be interested in liquor. It doesn't say never, okay? It just says seldom. If tempted, we recoil from it as from a hot flame. So there may be instances where it crosses your mind or you see something and for a second there, you think about it. However, sanity comes in and says, go away. You know, we recoil from it. And, you know, it's easy to do that. We're not fighting it. And we do have neutrality if we work the steps, if we stay spiritually fit. And then the only other thing that I wanted to comment on is Bill's sense of humor in the second part of this, where he says his only chance for sobriety would be a place like the Greenland ice cap. Even there, an Eskimo might turn up with a bottle of scotch and ruin everything. You know, it starts off very serious, and then he just makes it light. I just love everything that Bill says, and every time I read this, something else pops out at me, and it all depends on where I am spiritually. And as has been said, this is daily work. I have to do my spiritual practice every morning before I start my day, or I am a stark raving lunatic. And I'm so grateful that I have tools, that I have the steps, and that I have this fellowship. And with that, I will pass. Thanks.
Thanks very much, Liz A. from California. Next up is Babylonia A, followed by Rachel R. Good morning, Babylonia.
Good morning, my fellows, and good morning, Mo. Thank you for your service, and thank you, everyone, for your shares. for me, at the beginning of my abstinence, what I read in the big book or what my sponsor told me, I can't quite remember, was rather than think about the food, because I was going to a lot of events, rather than going to think about the food, think about the people around you and how you can be of service to them. And that was like such a revelation. And I thoroughly enjoyed like just being able to talk to someone and focus on them and ask them questions about themselves and get them to share about themselves and see how they like got a little bit happier and a little bit more comfortable, and because like I was trying to help them, and that made me feel really good that I was, you know, being of service in a way and being helpful and useful. So that helped me not think about the food as much. My alcoholic foods don't speak to me anymore. Sugar and flour and nuts and what else don't I eat? Dairy don't speak to me anymore, but sometimes I do still overeat abstinent foods, like mostly fruit, and that's a compulsive food behavior that I'm still working on, but, you know, I still have hope that I'm working through the steps again. I still have hope that with the steps and with time, I can surrender that compulsive food behavior more deeply to God. And just today, I'm very grateful for this program, how deeply it's helped me, how all of you guys have helped me so much. I'm eternally grateful for you all. And God is the greatest reality of my life. He either is everything or he is nothing. And I just want to claim my seat that today I will serve God and be grateful and joyful. Thank you for letting me share.
Thank you very much, Babylonia A. Up next is Rachel R., followed by Cheryl S. Good morning, Rachel.
Hi, good morning. Can you hear me? Okay.
I can.
Oh, great. Thank you. Thank you so much for your service. So I, too, don't think I ever, like, read this paragraph before. I mean, I'm sure I did because I've read Working with Others. But, we meet these conditions every day. An alcoholic who cannot meet them still has an alcoholic mind. There's something the matter with his spiritual status. Right. So this is like what the only chance for sobriety would be someplace like Greenland Ice Cap where, yeah. So it doesn't matter like where I am. If I'm not working my program and I'm not in a fit spiritual condition, someone could show up somewhere where I feel like I'm safe and protected. And that might be a false sense of security if I'm not really working my program, because someone can show up with, you know, something that appeals to me and I might go ahead and partake. Thankfully, nothing that I used to eat appeals to me anymore. It may occur as like pretty or, you know, a beautifully decorated piece of pastry or something, but it's nothing that I want to put in my mouth, which was never the case before. So for the fact that that is something I don't want anything to do with, or, and I can't stand the smell of, you know, the pastry aisle, if I have to run in there to get olive oil or something that's not related to, you know, sweets and stuff that's in that aisle. It's kind of like an assault on my nose, and that's, you know, that's not what it was before. So it's like, I know this program's working. I know that because I have my food plan. I know that because I sponsor. I know that because they come to meetings and make my outreach calls, that I am safe and protected, you know, from this disease. And I also can't ever think that I'm like 100% safe at any time, because if I stop working these steps, if I stop working my program, like my hair's on fire, there's the possibility that I could, you know, relapse. And that's what just came up for me with this this paragraph right here, that I could be anywhere far away or protected myself or stayed away from different events and things, which I have done before, but someone could show up at my door with something in hand, even if I've avoided everything else. And those are the situations where it's one thing to be in a situation where there's known temptations and you can prepare for that in advance, but there's going to be situations where what it says here, that Eskimo might turn up with a bottle of scotch and ruin everything. So just, yeah. So for me, I know that I have to consistently keep working on my program and to keep myself in a fit spiritual condition and abstinent and from my compulsive eating and my compulsive food behaviors. Thank you so much for allowing me to share. I pass.
And perfect timing. Thank you very much, Rachel R. Before I take Cheryl S., I'll remind everybody where we're at. We're on page 101. First paragraph, we meet these conditions every day, and it ends with, on the theory he would escape the alcohol problem. And after Cheryl, we may have time for one or two more. Good morning, Cheryl.
Good morning, Mo. This is Cheryl S., as in Sam, from Nevada, and I'm a grateful, recovered, compulsive overeater. And what my higher power brought to my attention this morning was spiritual fitness. And I know in the big book, Bill liked to do a lot of analogies or comparisons, and for me, it made me think about physical fitness. And what does it take for me to be physically fit? And how has that process worked for me over time? And you know, there were times that I wanted to get physically fit and I was desperate to do it. And I'd show up at the gym and I would take every class that they had, and I would be super on fire about it. And then I would go home and a day or two later, the effects of over-exercising would hit and I would be in agony and I would lose my motivation to go back to the gym. And then there were times when I just took it like one bite at a time. Go to the gym, take a class, take an easy class, you know, as I got in better physical shape, take a little bit harder class, and keep working it like that. And that's how I got physically fit. And then I was thinking about, okay, going to the gym. So what would I do to prepare to go to the gym? So I might go out and buy some nice clothes for the gym. I'd pay for a membership. I'd go, I'd speak with a fitness counselor, and they would show me all around the gym, and this is the group fitness room, and this is the free weights, and this is this, and this is how we do this, and this is how we do that. But nothing happened unless I started working out, and I worked out on a regular basis. And that's how I would become physically fit. And that's the same way that I become spiritually fit. I have to do the work, and I have to do it every day. I can't go to the gym on Monday and then expect that I'm going to be in great shape on Friday, or get in great shape and then stop for 3 months and think that I'm going to be still in great physical condition. So it's a one bite at a time, and it's consistency. It's doing it every day. And for me, that means sitting every morning with God and taking those pauses. And was that time? No?
No, not yet. No, no.
Okay. Okay. So I take those pauses. I stay in fit spiritual condition, and just like I want to stay in fit physical condition. And some of the benefits of that, of being in fit physical condition, is that the things that I like to do, I enjoy to do, I enjoy doing, thank you. I enjoy more because I am in good shape to do them. And the thing I want to close with too is, if I'm in good physical condition, if an emergency comes up and I've got to run for my life, I'm physically fit to do it. And that is the same with my spiritual fitness. Thank you for letting me share today and for your service. I pass.
Thank you very much, Cheryl S. And we have time, although we value your experience, we ask that you limit your sharing to every third day in order that others might share their experience too. We have time for one more share, one more 3-minute share.
Robin B.
Robin B., you're on. Robin, take it.
Okay. Hi, I'm Robin B. from Ohio, compulsive overeater. And when I read in the big book, it reminded me of this experience when I was early on in my abstinence, and I had to travel with my husband to see his family out of state, and I was very nervous and I was very concerned about my abstinence and the food, and you know, working with my sponsor and listening to her and doing what she told me what I needed to do with my food, and we were with my husband's family, and they wanted to take us to this small town and show us this town near where they live. And there was this candy store that his family wanted to go into. And I remember thinking, oh, you know, praying to my higher power, you know, what am I going to do? I don't want to go in there. I don't want to be overcome with the smells and the sights and all of that. Because that was my, you know, that was my addiction. And you know, I'm praying, and I remember my higher power, he's like, Robin, you're going to be okay. I got you. Go in. Be with your family. You're going to be okay. And I did. And I went in, and I, you know, was able to be with my family, and you know, there was, and And it was a positive experience, even though there was all of this, all of these items that were my addiction. My higher power had me, and I didn't break my abstinence. So, I just wanted to share that, and that I had to learn to trust my higher power, and that he's got me, and he will protect me, and he will get me through whatever I need to get through, to keep my abstinence. It's totally dependent upon him and me trusting him. So with that, I think he's letting me share, and I pass.
Thank you, Robin B. We have time for like a one-minute share. If somebody would like to take that, have a burning desire. Anybody want to take that 1 minute? Okay. Oops, my computer went off.
This is Nirvana A.
Hey, Mo.
Oh, Nirvana. Okay, you got the 1 minute. Go, girl.
I just wanted to thank you for your service. It's always a pleasure to hear everyone's shares. And I just wanted to claim my seat today. I haven't shared for a long time to say that this program really, really works. And at the beginning, I didn't understand what it meant to give my whole life to my higher power, God. But someone suggested I just act as if, and I just play it. So now I just play it. I say, okay, God, what do you want me to do next? What is this? And it actually is working. It works. If you work it, and you just take it as a game for those people who don't like the higher power concept, just play with it and just have fun with it. And with that, I pass, and thank you so much, Mo.
Perfect. Thank you very much, Nirvana, for closing us out. And thank you, everyone, for your shares and your service. And we will now close with the reading from the Big Book on page 164, followed by the Serenity Prayer. And I will ask Lorraine N. to please read a vision for you. Good morning, Lorraine. Press star one. Are you, Lorraine? Not hearing you, Lorraine. Not all to it. I'll take care of that. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.